We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
You know, that's why Scott Van Pelt is an artist. Because now I'm thinking, how much perfume do you need to put on a big pile of poop to sort of mitigate it?
The bottle?
How many bottles? Scent works best?
Well, I think that's the real question is,
what's the mixology?
What's the best smell to counteract the smell of poo? Like, yeah. As someone who has, I think, over 30 candles currently in his house right now, I could probably start to experiment with some scents, considering some of the other things that happen in my house.
Project for tomorrow. Yeah. So get working on that.
Yeah, I got a great candle in my bathroom. And see, that's one of the real keys, is in the day of like air fresheners and poo-pourri and all that stuff that certainly helps the smell, sometimes there's no substitute for a good old-fashioned candle. And the other crazy thing about candles is they smell very good when they're lit, but it's always amazing. Like, it's when I blow the candle out that you really get to kind of taste
the real scent of it.
I feel like that's the thing they don't tell you when you first start burning, is it's really the afterburn that gets you a lot of the bang for your buck out of the candle.
This is not stuff you get on most morning shows.
I think that's the stuff that you have to actually experience.
Yeah.
You know, somebody can tell you that, but you need to experience it.
Yeah, you got to go through a little bit of life in the world of candles before you can get to these kind of conclusions.
Speaking of experiences, we're experiencing the PGA Tour back. They've gone through two stops, and the next stop is the Travelers Championship this weekend at TPC River Highlands. Had the chance to work with the good folks at Travelers last night and did a virtual discussion with Bubba Watson, Jordan Spieth, the defending champ Chez Reavy, and Mark Leishman, all former champions.
For those who may not know what Trey is talking about, it's here in Hartford, Connecticut.
Yes, it's Hartford, Connecticut. Yes. TPC River Highlands, PGA Tour stop, Cromwell, Connecticut. And as I was walking into the lobby of the hotel last night to have that experience, I noticed a very tall gentleman in a red T-shirt and shorts wearing a mask. And even with a mask, you cannot hide the smile of our next guest. He has been our adopted guy since he basically blew out his ankle after a hole-in-one at his first Masters experience of the Par 3 Championship. PGA Tour professional Tony Finau, who joins us now. Tony, how are you this morning, my friend?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing? Thanks for having me on again.
Anytime.
Tony. All going well here. So I guess before we could dive into each tournament, how overall we've seen NASCAR be going since May 17th, you guys now going to your third tournament. From all the protocols, that's the one thing we kind of first put away is, oh, it's just another tournament. But all the protocols you're going through, how has that been and has it stayed consistent each week?
Yeah, it's been consistent each week. You know, if anything, I think they're doing a little bit more than each week, just because of you know, already having one case test positive, as we found out last week. But it's been crazy. But I'm happy that we're back out and playing. I'm happy the stance of the PGA Tour is taking and being proactive about everything and setting a date kind of early and just being hopeful and moving forward with the schedule. So it's been nice being out. It's been a lot different, you know, not only the fan part of it, but the whole testing, you know. You know, we've got the nasal testing, we've got the saliva testing going on twice a week, and those aren't like pleasant experiences, but you know, to just be out and competing, I like where the PGA Tour is taking this. And in the first couple of weeks, it's unfortunate that we had a positive test last week, but the first couple of weeks, I would say, has been a success.
Yeah, you mentioned that Nick Watney, the positive test on the tour. How did that affect guys on the tour when you all start getting that news just on a personal basis?
Yeah, it was a weird feeling. It ran through the golf course like a shockwave. Everybody heard, and so we were all a bit cautious. I think a little more cautious. We roamed around, not wondering maybe who else might have it, and maybe was, you know, just a bit more cautious than we were even before we found out about Nick. But you know, you don't wish that upon anybody. But with the numbers that were being tested, I think it was inevitable that there was going to be at some point a positive test, and unfortunately, it was Nick Watney.
Tony Finau with us, a PGA Tour golfer here in town for the TPC River Highlands Championship, the Travelers Championship here in Hartford, or actually Cromwell, Connecticut. And we mentioned that you mentioned the testing, and I was talking to some of the players last night, and it certainly seems like the tour is going out of their way. If you fly in on the tour charter, you have to be tested before you leave and get on the plane and all that kind of stuff. You mentioned the screenings when you get there and the nasal testings. Is there anything in your mind that the tour could have done any differently or any better to try and avoid having Nick Watney come up and be at the course with a test?
No, I mean, not really, not without really taking away our freedoms. I mean, you know, I think we're kind of at the discretion of ourselves once we leave the golf course, and you know, they give us the recommendations, and if we follow the proper guidelines that the PGA Tour has set in place, like I said, I think it's been a successful couple weeks. You know, it's unfortunate that we've had one. And moving forward, if we have more, I think, you know, there could be some questions that could be raised. But, you know, hopefully that's not the case. I haven't heard of any this week. And, you know, the one out of the thousands of tests that have been taken, I think is a good number to start for the PGA Tour.
Tony Finau joining us here on Golic and Wingo. So it was either a week or two ago in the tournaments, our own Michael Collins was reporting that in a practice round, maybe guys just, you know, when they got back out into the course, it's kind of, you kind of old habits die hard. We're kind of close to one another, caddies and golfers, kind of, you know, golfing and practicing, and that there was a tweet set out by the PGA saying, hey guys, you need to work on social distancing. Did that happen, and what was the word from the PGA if they thought you guys weren't doing enough social distancing practicing?
Yeah, they sent us messages quite often, and that's the part that you know, the public or nobody gets to see. You know, they sent us a couple private messages throughout the week telling us to maintain, you know, our social distancing measures and just all the guidelines that they've set in place, you know, for our return. So that part of it has been hard to do, you know, honestly, on the golf course because of the contact that we have with our caddy and what we ask them to do. It's a very tough thing to do, you know, and I would just say for most of us on the PGA Tour, you know, we haven't thought that much about, the social distancing on the golf course, because it's almost impossible to do when you have your caddy there with you. And that's kind of the tough part about it for someone in my position, you know, as serious as I've been taking the COVID-19 and those, you know, extreme measures, it's extremely hard to do that on the golf course with your caddy. You know, you require them to wash your ball and to help you read a putt, and, you know, which they've got to be standing pretty much, you know, behind you, and, you know, on the tee box, sometimes there's not a lot of room. So it's hard to adhere to those, you know, measures that are being taken. And, you know, I don't know what the answer is for a PGA Tour player or the guidelines inside the ropes, but, all I can say is that those are hard guidelines to adhere to when you have two guys inside the ropes, as you do on the PGA Tour.
And that seems to be the normal way that you guys would go about business. I'm curious, as far as that part of it, the actual golf, how has that felt? Has that actually been the only normal part of this process?
Yeah, pretty much. Yep, just the competing. And even at that, you know, when people aren't around, you feel like you're competing and, you know, playing a practice round with your buddies. It's quite different, you know, that's for sure. And we miss seeing the fans out there. I'm going to miss the fans out here this week in Connecticut. I love being here at the Travelers Championship and playing with, you know, in front of some of the best fans I feel like we have all year on the PGA Tour, on one of the best venues. So, you miss that excitement that they bring and the energy that they bring to these events. But, you know, that whole deal with not having fans has been, quite different and quite strange, but, you know, it's what we're working with for now in our sport.
Yeah, and again, that will be, I think there will be some fans returning to the courses down the road.
I think and they're going to go five tournaments without, yeah, and then they're going to start, yeah, bringing in fans.
So this is the third. Yeah. Tony Finau is with us here. So Tony, can we talk about the thing that has dominated the sport of golf on the PGA Tour since it's returned. And that is the mass that is Bryson DeChambeau. I mean, by the way, you are a very tall, athletic dude.
Yes.
But, you know, you're sort of lithe and lean and cut. And then Bryson shows up looking like Thanos from the Avengers. When you saw him for the first time, what was your reaction?
Yeah, well, I knew he had put on a lot of weight. I'd already seen pictures throughout quarantine and him posting throughout quarantine. So I knew, but when I saw him, even when I see him, you know, I just saw him yesterday walking back out on Sunday after the delay that we had. And I couldn't believe him walking up the fair. I couldn't believe how big he is. He literally looks like he should be in the NFL, you know. he's so big and looks, you know, it's like, you know, super strong. I think I had the chance to play with him. He was my partner in our first match at the President's Cup in 2019, just in December.
Right.
And he was about 218, 220, you know, like, and he was in the middle of this whole process of getting bigger, getting stronger. He told me he's going to, you know, hey, I want to get to 240. And I was looking at him like, you're crazy, you know, and, you know, of course, the next time I see him, he is 240. So, you know, I think he's an extremist. And what I mean by that is, you know, when he believes in something, he's all in. And that's why he's so great, you know, and that's why he did what he did. He believes that if you're bigger and stronger, it's going to give him longevity in this game. And he's proven right, you know, so far. He's hitting it further. He's playing some great golf. And it's pretty crazy. You know, not a lot of guys – I've had this happen to me on the range at a PGA Tour event. But, you know, there's so much great players. Nobody really stops and watches anybody hit. Nobody stops and watches anybody play. They just kind of say hi, walk down the range, not a big deal. Last week at the range, it was unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it. Everybody on the range stopped hitting golf balls and was just watching Bryson hit his driver. He teed up about 15 drivers on Thursday and just started sending these drivers over the net. I mean, flying them 330, 340 in the air. And it's just, I mean, you've never seen anything like it. And so you knew, yeah, the talk has been him, but rightfully so. You know, he's changed his game and kind of turned a lot of heads on the tour. So it's quite a cool thing for him.
Yeah, we're watching batting practice.
Right. Yeah. It's like, he clearly believes in cheeseburgers. I'll tell you that much.
No, but I mean, you can imagine. We're all amazing, you know, amazing talent. There's so many great players. So many guys hit it far. So many guys hit it good, straight, great wedge players. When all of us are stopping and just want to watch Bryson hit drives, there's something pretty amazing about that, that his peers are giving him that, you know, that type of attention. So, you know, that speaks to what he's been able to do to his body and how much speed he's been able to pick up. We've all played with him before, and it's a whole different animal now.
Do you think everyone else on the tour is going to follow suit? Like, Tony, are you going to start bulking up?
Lucky for me, I've got the luxury of having speed. You know, I will say this. You know, I was recorded at swinging and getting up to 200 mile an hour ball speed last year, and it took me about 7 balls. So, I'd like to get on a range with him and duke it out and see if you can hit it further. Still,
that's what we need.
Yeah. I would pay money to watch that. I'm telling you that right now.
That's why here at Gold and Wingo, we have designated him Bryson DeChambeau. That's what we're going with. Tony, as far as golf. All this time off. Now, I know golf courses are some of the things that opened up first, so you can go out and hit some. Third tournament in. How's your game? Normally, where it would be at this point, how is your game now?
My game feels good. You know, there's definitely a little bit of rust after the first couple of weeks. I made a lot of birdies the first 2 weeks, but I also made a lot of bogeys. And kind of out of nowhere, you know, I feel great, and all of a sudden hit a super errant shot. So my game feels great, and I think for me, most of the rust is off. And again, I've made a lot of birdies these last couple of weeks, which is always a great sign, you know. If I can clean up some of those mistakes, you know, I've got a chance these next couple of weeks I'll be playing. So I'm excited to be on a golf course that I like a lot. You know, I've got to have some success here in TVC River Highlands, so I'm excited to get after it this week.
I mean, just to understand how well the tour has come back. The guy that won it last week, Webb Simpson, was at 22 under par. Tony was 12 under par for 4 rounds, and he finished 10 strokes behind. I mean, sometimes you just get run over and say, hey, man, good job.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do. So, Tony, hey, listen, always good to see you. Always good to talk to you. We appreciate your time, and we know this is one of your favorite courses. Good luck this week. Have fun, okay?
Thanks, guys. Always appreciate talking with y'all.
Thanks, yeah, Tony. Fun. Appreciate it. That is incredible. I mean, yeah. That just reminded me of everybody going to watch McGuire do batting practice or something. I mean, these are all professionals. All the top players in the game stopping and watching something that's not done on the driving range, watching this guy hit drive.
Guy's literally Happy Gilmore out there.
The beef hammer.
I'd love to see him tee it up at like a Top Golf.
Well, what's interesting, literally, if you go back, you can find the video. He was teeing it up 30 yards behind everybody else.
It's unreal.
It was nuts.
You know, because we always see some of these golfers who are slight, but their leverage and
Justin
swing
Thomas
speed,
is 140 pounds.
And how far they hit the ball, Bryson is certainly saying, okay, I'm bigger, I'm stronger, I'm going to swing harder, and the ball's going to go farther. Me see ball, hit ball, it go farther.
That's exactly right.
What's happening.
From the dude that literally golfed with a protractor before. I don't think that should be lost in this either. It's not like he went from normal golfer, guy walking out there with, you know, his funny pants and hat. No, he went from the nerd golfer, the golfer that was hell-bent on changing the way that we did this with his club lengths and the weight and letting the club do the work, to, nah, I'm going to let my big old biceps do the work.
How many clubs can he take out of his bag because of his drive now?
Well, apparently all he needs is, if he's hitting the driver, he calls it the Kraken, by the way.
The Kraken.
Calls it the Kraken. So if he's hitting it that far on a course where you can get away with the driver, you need like three wedges, and that's it,
This is like for any big guy, Mike, like you and I, just to say, see, grip it and rip it, man. Yeah. Just grip it and rip it.
I've been trying to do that for years, throwing out my back, and usually the problem is grip it and rip it doesn't work too much when you A, suck like I do, and B, usually play at a BAC that's above a comfortable level.
There's
a certain point where it goes from swing oil to there are three balls now. I am unsure which of these is the target, but I'm going to do my best.
Hey, one of the greatest golfers of all time actually won a tournament that way, which is a story I could tell you off there. It was amazing. So we'll see what happens this weekend at the Travelers Championship played here close to where we are in Connecticut, TPC River Highlands in Cromwell. Meanwhile, we're still about a month away, literally about a month away from the start of training camps in the NFL that are still planning to go the last week of July. We'll see how that plays out, and we'll see whether or not that Jamal Adams is going to be a Jet when that is all said and done, because he's made it pretty clear for the second time in less than a year, because it was, what, 4 or 5 games into the season last year, he was very upset and wasn't happy about things. There were discussions about a trade at the trade deadline middle of October last year. Nothing came of that, but he has now put it out there that he wants out of New York, and he wants to go somewhere. Problem is, A, you got to have a team that's willing to trade you in the Jets, and B, you got to have a team that's willing to give the Jets what they want back in a trade. We had Adam Schefter on with us, our fine NFL insider and hairologist, earlier today, and Adam basically said the Jets may be listening, but unless they're blown away, they have every intention of keeping Jamal Adams.
Now, look, they may get to the point where they listen to offers, and there may be a team out there that makes an aggressive push and has a strong stance to go to try to trade for him. But the Jets are not looking to trade him. It's not like something's imminent. I know it's all over social media, people saying, where is he going? Nowhere right now. He's the Jets' property, and they're not moving him right now.
So the bottom line is leverage, right? And what leverage you have. The only leverage he can apply at all is withholding services, right? He's supposed to make about 3.5 this year, and then next year in that option year, $9.9 million. So the only way you can get anything done if you're a player is to say, I will not step on the field or in your facility until a deal is done, or B, you trade me. And the team can say, okay, have fun sitting, and then you're sitting there and not collecting your pay. So there's the leverage, and then there's a line you draw, and then is anybody willing to cross that line?
Yeah, I think one of the difficult things that he's going to find in this, too, is just the timing of all of this. To get a team to swing on this, not everyone is built like the Houston Texans, who earlier this offseason were willing to do, and literally what the Texans have done for the last couple of years now, is swing wildly on these deals that don't make a lot of sense to the outside world. I'd have to imagine risk-aversion is something that most teams are operating by right now. And so you're either going to take, because in a lot of those deals that involve the Texans, what we saw was one, you know, kind of an exchange of players from a comparable level. If you were going to bring in someone like a Jamal Adams, you'd be looking for a team that was also looking to maybe get rid of a talented player at that level. Someone with draft capital they were willing to swing. And right now, I feel like everyone is going to sort of turtle in their approach because of all the uncertainty around next year's finances, the viability of a season just now. It's something to where, yeah, maybe you could have gotten a team to bite on that before who was really looking for a guy who plays an important position in today's league, But the way it's situated right now, it just seems like there's no way.
Well, and again, there was that video surfaced of him in Dallas saying, come to the Cowboys. He said, I'm trying. He's from there. That's obviously one of the reasons that would be a draw to him. And that's probably a reason why the Houston Texans would be a draw to him, even though they did give up DeAndre Hopkins. And it makes you wonder what's going on going forward with the long-term plans there. But there's just too many factors, and there's not enough leverage, I think.
No, there's not. And as far as the Cowboys, they paid Zeke. They paid Amari Cooper. They're going to pay Dak. They paid guys on defense. And because even Jamal said he probably wouldn't, if he got traded, wouldn't worry about a new deal. But at some point he is, which is going to be in the $14-15 million at least year range. So a team like the Cowboys, I mean, you talk about maxing out on position players and what you're paying them per year.
Well, and it's also him saying he wouldn't demand a new deal right away also flies in the face of the thing that we've heard time and time again is important if you are going to be trading a lot of capital for a player, which is getting them signed in short time after that. Because if you don't, and Jamal Adams goes out there and continues to play at a high level, you swing all the leverage back in his favor the way we saw happen with the Laremy Tunsil situation in Houston. So we know what the other outcome can be, and that in general we've heard it is in the best interest of the team to get a deal done if you're going to trade a lot for a guy right away.
Just so people understand where Jamal Adams is in his mind, this is his tweet to Marcus May, also a safety with the New York Jets. Just keep being you. Show the world why you're the best free safety in the game. You deserve everything coming your way. I'm going to miss balling with you the most. Believe that. So in Jamal Adams' mind, he has checked out.
Well, then he better be willing to sit, because it doesn't sound like the Jets are going to trade him. And why would they unless they're going to get a price that they want?
Yeah.
I mean, the Jets have to go ahead, sit. You're not going to make your money. Now, we won't have one of the best safeties on the field. There's that side of it. No doubt at all. No doubt about that.
And there's the human side, because he's saying he was told by them that they were going to redo a deal and he feels slighted. There's the human side that we see in a lot of organizations, which is the idea of having a disgruntled star, the idea of not paying and retaining talent that you searched so hard for in all these drafts and situations. But right now, this early in the deal, there doesn't seem to be a lot of reason for them to move.
No, there doesn't. And we'll see if later push comes to shove. But right now, in Jamal Adams' minds, he is not planning on being a Jet for the 2020 season. Speaking of the 2020 season, how solid are the plans that we will actually have a 2020 NFL season in the midst of what we're going through as a country? We'll try to get some answers on that front next from the people whose job it is to know this stuff.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
That has been the plan all along for the NFL since the COVID outbreak began. The entire process was, we believe we can start on time, and we believe at some point, even Texas, they're talking about maybe 25 to 50% yep. capacity in stadiums by the time the fall rolls around. But with the spike we've seen in cases in places like California, Florida, Arizona, and other Western and Midwest states after the first wave really hit the East Coast hardest than anybody else, is that a possibility? Again, we don't know a lot on this,
nope.
So we want to rely on the experts more than anything else. And for more on that, we're delighted to be joined this morning by Dr. Celine Gounder, the Clinical Assistant Professor of Medicine and Infectious Diseases at New York University. Dr. Gounder, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate your time. We obviously love sports. It is what we do for a living, talking about sports, and we're excited to see these sports come back. But as these sports are coming back and players are gathering at colleges and universities for the first time since being away for a while, we're seeing a lot of these athletes test positive. So is there anything in this sort of recent surge in cases that has been surprising to you?
I wouldn't say surprising. I think what's been notable is that many of the cases that we're seeing on teams are among teams that have training facilities in states that are seeing major surges in cases. So places like Arizona and Florida, South Carolina, where we've seen big surges in cases. And it's really hard, obviously, to keep a bubble around a team where there's no interaction with the community. So absent that, they are, of course, going to be at risk for contracting whatever is circulating locally.
Overall, doctor, do you think it's the right move for these college students going back to school, professional athletes playing in their home cities to be going ahead, or do you think they should be waiting longer?
Well, if it were my choice, I would say we should be waiting longer. You know, obviously there are competing interests. And I think it's also a different calculation when you're talking about college sports versus professional sports and who's taking on the risk and who's profiting from that risk, frankly. So, you know, I think there should be different thresholds for the college sports and the professional sports.
And we'll get to the college sports in a second because I have some questions there, certainly. But you mentioned the prospect of trying to bubble. What are your views on the NBA's bubble protocol and from what you've heard, the chances it has of being successful?
Well, the problem is that you're not just talking about the team members. You're talking about their friends and family. And then you're also talking about people who might be working in the hotel, people who might be working in the restaurant, catering to them. And so, you know, when we talk about a bubble, what we really mean is no one goes in or out of that. And this is a very, very loose kind of situation. You could think about it like a marriage. Are you monogamous or not? And, you know, how many partners has each person had? That very quickly, that net of people who you're including in that, quote, bubble expands rapidly. So it's really hard to contain an infection in that environment.
I guess in that environment, too, how much does the nature of the sport come into play? We've talked so much about sports that are maybe a little naturally socially distanced than the other. How much would you say is the importance of protocol versus just some sports that involve more contact than others when it comes to the potential spread for this kind of thing?
Well, that makes a huge difference. So is this an indoor sport or an outdoor sport? Is this a sport where you have physical contact among players or not? And then, you know, what is the equipment that they're wearing as protective gear? So, for example, the NFL or the NHL could easily build in face shields inside their helmets that would be protective. Now, it's not just when they're playing, though, right? It's what they're doing in the locker rooms, what they're doing in training facilities when they may not have all that equipment on, and also what they're doing in their free time socializing with one another. So there's a lot of different situations in which they may be transmitting the infection that may be off the court and off the field.
Dr. Celine Gounder with us, clinical assistant professor of medicine and infectious diseases at New York University. You brought up the NFL, so let's talk about it because that's the big enchilada in all of this, whether it's in college football, which drives the money for all other athletic sports to be played, or the NFL, which is the most popular and most financially successful sport in this country by a wide, wide margin. Obviously, that is a sport you cannot practice social distancing in. It is a sport you're going to be playing outdoors, and it's a sport, if things go well, you're going to be playing outdoors in November and December and in January. What are your real concerns that that's a possibility?
Well, I think part of it depends on if you're talking about players on the field with or without fans in the stadium. I think fans in the stadium is a really bad idea. And I think you have to have, if you were going to try to even attempt that, some sort of screening process in terms of people who might have fevers, people who might be symptomatic when they came into the stadium. You'd really have to socially distance them within the stadium. So you'd have to have stadiums probably at about a quarter of the capacity. And even then, the risk remains. And then in terms of the players returning to play, you know, I don't know. I think you would need to institute very strict protocols. And, you know, you have one weak link on a team that can really put everyone at risk. So, you know, these are large teams, many players, and as I mentioned before, their family and friends are part of the risk population too. And would players be willing to say, look, I'm going to focus on playing, you know, with my team right now, and I agree I'm not going to see friends and family for the next couple months at least. And that's a really tall order.
Doctor, I'm wondering going forward, we all are wondering, is this the new normal? Will we get back to a regular normal? When there is finally an approved vaccine for this, will this be then treated basically like the flu, get the vaccine and everything kind of goes back to normal, or will it not?
I think at that point, yes. Although if you look at our flu vaccination rates, there's a lot of work to be done. So I think a big part of our job right now is getting people to understand that vaccines work, they're safe, they're effective, and to really ready people to take and sign up to get the vaccine when it's available in about a year. I think, unfortunately, we're already seeing people on social media saying that the vaccine's not going to be safe and effective, and that people should not get it. And I think also in the interim, we need to remember this is not a black and white choice of complete lockdown versus we have a vaccine. There are things we can be doing in the meantime. And that discussion has not really been happening enough. We've heard about the testing, but we haven't heard enough about contact tracing and isolation. And very few places have done the hiring. I mean, really, it's like a whole workforce you need to hire to do that. It'd be like enlisting a new army for a war. That's the way we need to think about that. And with the exception of New York and California and a couple other specific places, that kind of hiring has not happened. And that's really what will allow us to achieve some sort of semi-normal in the coming year. So that's what we need to focus on right now.
Dr. Gounder, as we search to try and get back to that point and have to work in the interim with the situation that's at hand, and you mentioned the disparity between professional sports and college sports, I'm curious because I've heard this outcry from some involved in this process. Would a uniform process across college athletics be more beneficial at this point, or is allowing schools in different areas to handle this differently the only way to go about it?
Well, I do think there do need to be regional geographic differences, because if you're in the middle of a huge surge in cases in a place like Arizona or Florida or South Carolina, the measures that need to be instituted are going to be a little bit different and really should be much stricter in those environments than they might be, for example, in New York State, which has had its first wave. We are done with our first wave, unlike most parts of the country. And so the approach does need to be tailored for the place. But that said, you know, I think some things that we might talk about doing in the professional leagues, things like testing people once or twice a week, once testing is more available, which may be the case in the fall that we'll be able to do that. As we continue to ramp up testing, I don't think that's going to be a feasible approach at the college level for a whole host of reasons, cost only being one of them. And so, you know, I think you're also dealing with students who are not being paid for their work in a sense. You're asking them to make personal sacrifices potentially about not seeing their girlfriend or boyfriend. And that just becomes a much more difficult thing when you're talking about something that's not yet a paying job.
Dr. Celine Gounder with us, clinical assistant professor of medicine and infectious diseases at New York University. Doctor, we're up against the clock, but I do want to ask this one question here, because we've sort of gone through this phase in the East Coast with Boston, Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, and now it seems to have migrated. So just so people understand, this is still the first wave, right? It's not the second wave. It's the first wave sort of moving across the country.
Yeah, that's right. This is the first wave. Some places have had and are over their first wave, so like places in the Northeast. But in much of the country, you're still very much in your first wave, and we may not actually see a clear second wave in those parts of the country, because they're just, in a lot of places, we're just seeing ongoing transmission, whether that's, you know, like Florida, for example. You haven't seen anything go down yet, and if anything, you'll see another spike on top of that in the fall, when you have at least some kids going back to school, you have people who are spending more time indoors, and so they're in more crowded conditions, more likely to transmit to one another. So most of the country is still very much in a first wave.
And we'll see what happens going forward, whether or not there will be a second wave combined with the flu in the fall, which is a concern for a lot of people. Dr. Gounder, thank you so much for your time and your wisdom. We appreciate it this morning. Thank you.
My pleasure. Stay safe and be well.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
See what happened in 94? Okay, baseball was dead.
Yeah.
I mean, it was dead. I mean,
and there's, but
it's Golic and Wingo.
A nice Trey Flub in the mix.
What?
Golic and Wingo brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless.
I don't
no
believe
contract,
you.
No compromise.
I don't believe you. My headphones weren't on.
It happens.
Let's
run it back.
Clip, why don't we run it back for him one time?
See what happened in 94? Okay, baseball was dead.
Yeah.
I mean, it was dead. I mean,
and there's, but
it's Golic and Wingo.
Wow. Wow.
That was really good by me. I was being very Golic-y right there.
He's a big dumb animal, isn't he, folks?
Me speak for living. Words, phone.
Wow, notes. You did it, and you still threw me under the bus for it.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like a
verb,
the,
huh?
The deflection tactics on this show are well documented.
The Golic.
All we do is lash out at the others the minute one of us is criticized.
All I got to say is I didn't go to school for this.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, I didn't either. I went for drinking. And the classes were on the side, which might explain a few things.
What I majored in and what I minored in, right?
Yeah, it took 5.5 years.
There you go.
But that's a separate issue entirely. Anyway, we just had a really good conversation with Dr. Celine Gounder, who, again, is the clinical assistant professor of medicine and infectious diseases at NYU, which is a long way of saying she's a hell of a lot smarter than us three moms.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Let's be clear about that. But it was interesting, right? I thought we had some really good information from her. But in talking about what may happen in the fall, I didn't get an alarmist tone at all.
Well, I think where we are is, and I think she said in the beginning, people are doing things for reasons, you know, that aren't all have to do with safety. And we know that word is money, right?
Yes.
People are getting back to work for the revenue. People out in the world getting back to work for the money to make money because they haven't had jobs. And certainly professional sports, college sports, we know the money that's involved. To me, it seems there's a whole lot of big word doctor talk and all these things involved in it.
Fancy book learning.
And I try and be as simple as possible. And I think I've showed that over 23 years with the way I talk sometimes.
No.
But it seems to be, okay, you're going to try this. You know, we're not going to, as she said, I'd rather they wait, but they're not going to wait. Or if you're going to try this, then follow the protocols as best you possibly can. All right. So it's like, follow the protocols as best you can, test, social distance, and then you know what? Hope. And then you end up crossing your fingers and hope that you don't get an outbreak.
So don't start a side tennis league.
Well, I mean, I think you see it right there. We have seen NASCAR start. We have seen the PGA start. We have seen some soccer start. We've seen testing. We've seen protocols. And you see some positives for it, but for the most part, it's worked along the way. Then you see tennis, and again, Novak Djokovic had a charity tournament. No protocols, basically.
No
social distancing, no testing. And shockingly, multiple players test positive and they can't do the damn thing.
Including Joker and his wife.
Including, yes. So, I mean, if you're going to try it, cool. I think most people are saying, okay, we're opening back up. Again, this goes to the real world, not just the sports world. But at least follow the procedures and give yourself the best chance to make this thing work. And then again, hope.
Right.
Right?
Well, it just Golic and Wingo presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests, including Dr. Gounder, joined us on the Shell Penzoil Performance Line. Just try and avoid the simple stuff, like that Orlando team in the NWSL that decided to go many players or many members of the team en masse
support,
to a
right.
bar where there was no social distancing. And lo and behold, they've had a bunch of tests. They've had to drop out of the tournament they were going to play.
Tournament was going to start out in Utah, and everything was going to be out there, and they have to be out of it now because multiple players and staff tested positive. Just give yourself the best chance to make this succeed, right?
Don't be your own worst enemy.
But I guess it's going to be how you go about that. We've talked a lot about the personal freedoms that players are worried about going into the NBA bubble. But as Dr. Gounder said, you talk about on college campuses what you ask college athletes to potentially do in those situations. That's certainly different for a number of reasons.
Yes.
That might be different, that might be in the best interest of them as players, but certainly for the unpaid players to have to go out of their way to not do certain other things that maybe they would be able to do even amidst a pandemic in this one, you're asking in those situations. So that was the other thing she did, was draw a very clear line between what's going to go on in the college ranks and the pro ranks, because the one thing we're seeing is as tests become more readily available, professional leagues have demonstrated, and the ones that have come back certainly, but all the plans that we hear for Major League Baseball, for the NBA's return, for the NFL eventually, is that regular testing is going to be a part of this.
Yep.
And that, as a portion of the protocol, amongst other things, is going to help give them the best opportunity going forward in a lot of this. Whereas at the college level, it's going to differ region to region and university to university as far as what they can afford to do in that.
And also, I'm talking about, too, I talk a lot about the pros and people out there in the real world working. These can be college athletes as well, where you want them to follow procedures and want them to do the right thing, but they're 18 to 22-year-old. We all go back to that time, especially if you're even an athlete. What do you think? You're invincible.
Correct.
Oh, you know what? If I get this, it's not, you know, people my age, you know, it's not horrible. You're down for a little bit. That's their thought process. Yeah. We all know our thought process back when we were that age. So you're fighting that as well.
And a lot of these players that are being tested positive are coming back asymptomatic.
Right.
They didn't even know they had it.
As Brian Floyd, who is the director of programming over at Banner Society, tweeted earlier today, I'm positive that college students, especially, will adhere to social distancing and definitely won't be drinking booze out of a trough or anything.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens going forward. Coming up on Wednesday's edition of Golic and Wingo, Ryan Clark will join us. Cheryl Swoops will join us. Plus, my top three-ish rankings on teams in the NFL that are all in for this season, Super Bowl or bust. Stay safe, everybody.
Can't wait.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.